Apple Eater meets the Witch Doctor. And the Big Bopper. Possibly something that John Williams could have been influenced by when he was writing the music for Star Wars. I don't know. The only person who might have a notion for that could be our legendary producer, director, all-round wonderful person, the amazingly talented Peter Beale. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive, Peter.
Hi there.
Excellent. Good to connect with you, good stuff. And what's the weather like in California? We didn't ask our earlier correspondent, Larry Nemechek.
We are having one of our 300 days of sun.
Right. Well, there we are. It's, in Lincoln, we were in Lincoln, England, we were scraping the ice off our cars this morning, if indeed we were using cars at all. I know you.
In fact, we were going to have unusually hot weather, probably 5 degrees more than normal, which will put us up into the 80s.
It must be tough over on the West Coast, but never mind. You know, there are all sorts of things that will happen on the whole basis. In the studio, we have Hannah Brown, who... Hannah, were you with us when Peter joined us on the programme a few weeks ago?
No, I missed it because I had to go to a meeting. So I was there for the first half of the show and sadly...
Well, you see...
missed the part where you were
The force is with you this evening, Hannah.
Yes,
you have connected from that point of view. And Hannah, a lover of all things science fiction, particularly Harry Potter. Is Harry Potter science fiction? A different question entirely. But Hannah, would you like to put a couple of questions to Peter Beale, the legendary producer, and just, as we said, we have second unit director on The House That Drew Blood, producer of A Touch of Class, The Aryan Couple, The Magic Balloon Space Ride, 5 Days, One Summer. Just take it away, please, Hannah.
Well, with this great list of things you've worked on, is there one thing that stands out as being your favourite thing to have worked on?
I got asked that a lot, and there are a number of for different reasons. I loved working on Lawrence of Arabia. Dr. Zhivago was fantastic. I think that my first sort of major contribution, where I really made the difference on the film, was A Touch of Class. Obviously, I have a lot of responsibility for Star Wars getting made in England, and that was enormously enjoyable. Producing with Fred Zimmerman, who was a great, great director, and with Sean Connery as acting, was just also fantastic. So there's lots of things that I've really enjoyed doing.
One of the things we were looking to talk to this evening, actually, Peter, was the changing nature of the film industry. And you know, clearly there are changes. I mean, the film industry as a culture was very much the heart of the 20th century. Here we are in the 21st century and people say things like Netflix and digital devices and it's all gaming and so on. Do you think we'll always have the film industry as a great cultural thing? Because in many years during the 20th century, many decades, people said, oh, film's finished. But it always comes back. There's something magical about seeing our dreams on the screen, isn't there?
I think the question is a little bit like when the train companies first started, they said they were in the train business, and they looked up and saw aeroplanes going overhead, and they didn't say we're in the transport business. And so other people developed the aeroplane. What we are in is the storytelling and emotion business. Originally, our medium was film, and so we called them films. But now, with the digital revolution, and the digital revolution has affected all aspects, from writing to exhibition, it is the digital revolution that has changed not so much the fundamental, and the fundamental is telling stories that create emotion, and hopefully telling stories that provoke thought and interest. That's the purpose of art. So the change in production, obviously, digital has allowed us to create any image that we can imagine and put people into that environment. So the digital in the production has expanded our visual capacity enormously. In theatres, there's two fundamental changes. One is the multi-screen, which, of course, wasn't available in the previous century. So you went to a cinema for a dedicated film. That limited the distributor's or the exhibitor's ability. So the multiplex cinema has changed the whole environment of the filming going to the cinema experience, and also the digital projection. And then, you have... Now we can see... films or saw storytelling on the telephone, let alone on our television at home and our laptops. So the digital revolution is the big change, but the bottom line is we're telling stories and we want to create emotion, and that's what people are asking us to do.
Andy, you're a keen aficionado of science fiction films and a semi-regular attendee of our science fiction film series, Planet of the Apes, tomorrow. Would you have any questions for Peter?
Yes, I was wondering what you felt about the pacing in sort of modern cinema, modern film, and particularly within the sci-fi category. Because one of the things that always struck me about Star Wars itself was how fast-paced it was. How you were never allowed to really, as an audience member, rest too much on your laurels before something new and a curveball, you know, hits you and your attention is suddenly sparked again. And I saw an interview once with George Lucas, and he said, yes, I was always asking the actors if they could just deliver that just a little bit faster, or if you just, you know, do that a little bit faster. So what do you think of the pacing in modern film? Has it been dumbed down a little bit, or what do you think?
Well, just two things. On that, first of all, George, in fact, we had a technique on the film to accelerate things. We actually sped up the opening and closing of doors artificially during the photography, which delayed shooting. But he did intentionally speed up the action. But what we had now is an audience who are visually literate. They can see in a 30-second commercial a story with a beginning, middle, and an end, whereas my parents would have had great trouble understanding what was going on. So as we have such a sophisticated audience and they can see minute details so rapidly, the pace of the editing has gone up to accommodate their appetites. And I think we'll just see more of it.
Mm. So a whole motion picture in 3 minutes, then bang, it's all over. Perhaps not. Maybe you still need to have, as Peter rightly said.
Well, I think probably not so much a whole motion picture in 3 minutes, but we will have more intense emotions and extended the emotions. So that's what it's all about. We go to the theatre, whether it's live theatre or concert or cinema, to experience emotions that would be too powerful to have in our daily lives. And that's the whole thing of literature as well, is to experience things that we couldn't possibly experience ourselves. That'd be too dangerous, too extreme, whatever. And I don't think that's going to go away. Just the format of how we see it. The cinema, of course, has this wonderful thing of the group experience. And it's quite clear that an individual in a cinema on his or her own wouldn't have the same experience as when the cinema is packed. And so there is information passing between people, and I think that's through their auras, but that's another conversation. There's subconscious knowledge that we're seeing, and that's what is building up the emotion of the group experience of cinema. If that group experience will survive, I hope it does, obviously, people seeing things at home are surrendering the group experience for the convenience.
Hannah, your thoughts on this one? The group experience versus the individual experience is something that I know Phil Leonis and Dean Hagland were talking about in this week's Chill Pack Hollywood, and kind of transcending that and working out our anxieties and so on.
Well, obviously I love both. I mean, today, as an example, I watched a film on my own on my laptop on Netflix in my room. But then at the same time, when I was walking outside with my housemate, we were very much excited about the idea of going to the cinema to watch Doctor Strange, which unfortunately we didn't go and do. But
you had to do your radio show.
Yeah, I mean, if I wasn't here, I could have seen it. But this is my dedication to obviously the show. But no, I do love both. But I feel like watching films with other people has become more now of a treat, like going to the cinema or even watching it together in your living room on a DVD. It's more of a treat or leisure activity. Whereas on your own, you can do it when you want, so watching whenever.
I mean, certainly that notion of the ratio between a mobile screen or a tablet screen and your face is pretty much the same way as if you're in a large screen cinema. I think that I didn't really buy into that, but I have ultimately taken that line. Just moving on briefly, Peter, in terms of the legacy that Star Wars, obviously clearly he's had that 1977 event, and clearly 40 years next year, grand scenario. I gather that there are even sort of mazes in York that are considering a possible Star Wars theme. I shan't reveal anything more, but it's a whole new world. Hannah, long before you were born when Star Wars emerged, you're obviously one of the Harry Potter generations, but what are your views on Star Wars?
Well, I do like it. I have seen all the Star Wars movies, and I'm looking forward to Rogue One coming out. I very much enjoyed, I think my favourite would be the new Force Awakens. I very much enjoyed that one. My brothers especially are very big Star Wars fans, and I'm definitely going to be making them jealous about who I've been talking to today, talking to Peter, when I let them know.
So clearly, Peter, that magic that you managed to capture in the bottle and the green lighting together with yourself, Alan Ladd, of course, George Lucas, and we mentioned, of course, the fantastic work and the designs of Ralph McQuarrie, the music of John Williams. It's worked to really create that legacy, which looks as though it's going to continue long into the 21st century.
Well, I hope so. It's got a good chance. I think it's very important that they re-look and re-emphasize the whole Force aspect of it. I think the Force was a major part, and I think they've lost a little bit of that. And I hope they bring more of that back.
An interesting point, that, Peter, because, I mean, share with us your thoughts on the Force, because I can see, certainly from an executive point of view, when you see that in the script, you think, is this just mumbo-jumbo, hocus-pocus? Is this something that sort of, is it a deus ex machina to actually help explain the whole thing? Is it about a magic carpet? But, I mean, from your own sort of readings of the whole thing, it does seem to have tapped into that Jungian collective unconsciousness of saying, actually, there is something here that really does impact us all as citizens of the galaxy.
Well, As we discussed at the festival, the Starburst Festival, the Force concept isn't new. It's Polynesian. It's been a major part of the Polynesian lifestyle. The American Indians, the Apache and Navajo, all had a very similar concept of the Force, and it has been around a long time. And so the Force definitely exists. It is available. And obviously, it's not. We haven't got hours to talk about it, but I made a lecture on it at Starburst about how it exists, how you can recognize it, and how you can tap into it individually. And it is, I think, very, very important.
Andy, any thoughts from yourself?
Just very briefly, does that link in any way with the idea of synchronicity? Go ahead.
Well, synchronicity, if you're talking about going on with Jung's group subconscious, yes, it links into that, and it also links into the group experience in the cinema. Mm.
Extraordinary. Of course, there is a line these days in cinema where, personally, if you don't want people munching on their popcorn and fiddling with their mobile phones, etc., just go away. I want to enjoy this in peace and quiet. But as you say, it's a whole new generational aspect. Peter, once again, time has kind of eluded us and prevented us from getting into A Touch of Class and a whole heap of other scenarios. Have to mention once again, of course, the Sunday the 13th of November, 7 p.m. The Los Angeles Breakfast Club Home Companion, a variety show taking place in Hollywood and at the Friendship Auditorium on 3201 Riverside Drive. There we are. Just want to address that. But Hannah, would you like
to... Are you coming over for that?
Well, I'd love to, but I suspect that the mid-rate drive jet probably won't get me from Lincoln, England to Los Angeles. However, Phil Leonis will be there, so will Lily Holliman, so will a whole heap of fine folk there. Were you ever a member of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, Peter? Because it was quite a famous event that has been resuscitated in terms of the LA Breakfast Club scene, and it's a piece of Hollywood history.
I was never a member of that, but I look forward to hearing more about it.
Well, that's a sensation. Hannah, last two questions for Peter Beale, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
It's very enjoyable. I like your program very much. And so I look forward, if you kindly invite me again, I'll be happy to participate.
A round of applause for Peter Beale. Yes. In fact, I think the campaign needs to start now. It should be a knight, or it should be Sir Peter Beale. I think we've got Sir David Lee, and I think, you know, we'll start the... Come 2017, we'll start the campaign, Peter. Peter, we salute you. Many thanks. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye.
Stop your diving and your messing around. You better mind your P's and Q's and your M's and N's and O's, because the
shadow knows. The shadow knows.
Who knows what evil lurks within the hearts of men? Phil Leonis knows. So I know Alec Baldwin did his best with respect to the Shadow. I'm sure it'll be resuscitated for too long. After all, without the Shadow, no Batman. Anyway, quite apart from that, Phil, I gather you lost part of the Peter Beale piece, but you've been with us for most of the programme today because you haven't been locked into the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, because for 1 week only, we went an hour back, and you don't go back an hour yourself until next week, when it's November the 6th, I think, or the weekend of November the 6th. Why the clock should go back, I don't know. I mean, surely they were just faulty merchandise if they were sent out in the first place. Sorry.
Well, yes, it was quite a thrill. I had forgotten that about the time change, and it was a thrill to be able to hear Camo this morning, because I almost never get to hear Cameron. So, of course, you truncated his appearance.
There's always the podcast, Phil. There's always the podcast.
That's true, but it's not live, you know. And I love the fact, as I told you, we were chatting during the break there, that during the last interview, the website went down, at least for me here. Suddenly it came up, error 502, which sounds like a science fiction horror film, error 502, bad gateway, and I can only attribute it to the massive amount of traffic that Mr. Beale was generating for the show, but then fortunately, as soon as that was over and people knew I was coming on, everything is right as rain on the website now, so it's perfect.
Just let it now, go, Phil. Let it go.
Why would you say something so offensive as, without the Shadow, we don't have Batman? Without the Shadow, we might not have Citizen Kane.
True.
Without the Shadow, we might not have any good movies ever in the sound yes, era. Yeah. Because, of course, it brought young Orson Welles to great stardom.
Indeed.
And it was, of course, on the basis of that and his own later radio productions that he's brought to Hollywood, and he creates the greatest movie ever made, and literally invents independent filmmaking all
the Magnificent Ambersons, let's face it. Touch of Evil.
Go.
One of these days, Phil Leonis will do a long shot, just as in Touch of Evil. I thought he was going to do it in The Lady Killers, but maybe next time.
I'm wondering what the longest... No, yeah, I'm wondering. I have done some pretty long takes, long shots, in the past. I have, indeed. And in the film I made with the aforementioned Alec Baldwin, who played the Shadow, I did some very long takes in Karl Rove, I Love You. So see how it all ties back together. Good night. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Exactly. Yeah, another 15 minutes to go, and we'll be handing over to the amazing Michael Barwise. Before I see Andy, you're back again.
They can't get rid of me.
It's like some rubber ball comes bouncing back to you, as the late, great Bobby V might have actually said. Or was it Bobby Darin? Word Perfect is featuring your good self, reading Elizabeth Barrett Browning, mm-hmm. or commenting on the poetry of Elizabeth Barrett Browning.
Both. A little bit of both.
Can I address the prime directive? Or no, it wasn't a prime directive question. It was a question about the Scalosians and the
yes.
episode Wink of an Eye, and why Kirk doesn't share the... And I liked Larry Nemesek's theory that it might have had to do with not violating the prime directive, where you don't interfere with any developing society. Though Kirk has often used his own point of view that there was no development as a reason to interfere, and certainly that would seem to apply there. And, of course, he never minded breaking the Prime Directive anyway. In fact, one of my favorite episodes, A Taste of Armageddon, is referred to by my really, really nerdy Prime Directive friends as a taste of to hell with the Prime Directive. So, but we're getting deep, deep album cuts here on Star Trek right now. And I would just like to point out, though, Alex, that as unforgivable as it might be that Kirk does not share the cure, and I agree that I think it really borders on unforgivable, it's nowhere near as unforgivable as the costumes designed for the Scalosians to wear.
Oh, come now.
So...
It was the 23rd century. You've got to have silver suits. And Dealer was looking very good. This can be set for stun and destroy, just like yours. Exactly. We could quote Andy, but I expect you also have not seen Wink of an Eye.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
I found your use of the word shapeshifter. I thought we were still talking about Star Trek, and you used it in reference to the U.S. presidential election, if
yes.
I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Well, how else can you explain voter fraud, let's face it? You know, I don't know why Trump hasn't gone straight down the shapeshifter line. You know, tell me, Donald, tell me.
You know, there's a poll out right now. He leads on the question of who is more trustworthy. He's leading far more than she is, which is why the polls are tied again. But the point is that, as I mentioned at the end of last week, maybe it was just on the phone with you, this is not going to be over next week. I mean, we keep thinking it's going to be over because, oh, thank goodness the election will be behind us. It won't be. This is going to be so contested for so long. I am fascinated by the idea, apropos of your shapeshifter comment, of Trump winning the election. I can only wonder at that point he must, for the first time, admit that he was wrong and say that the election, I guess it's not rigged. He'll have to at least acknowledge for the first time in his life that he was wrong about something. But then we would see just the unprecedented of an elected president in court in November for fraud and potentially in December on child rape charges. And so the crazy thing is that you would see an elected president who is not an inaugurated president. Obama would still be the sitting president, but you would have an elected president in court two successive months and probably impeached by the U.S. Congress before he ever gets inaugurated, which means we would be looking at President Mike Pence, and that's when you would get your shapeshifter, Alex, because Mike Pence has seemed like the most kind of reasonable, logical member of this whole Trump team, but when he becomes president, look out, because the true colors would then come out. So it is shaping up like a science fiction. I mean, it really is like some sort of great speculative fiction endeavor that is taking place now.
All I have to say is last week when you were connected with this film, you uttered the words, how can you not have seen Gillian Anderson's latest series, The Fall? And collectively, I mean, we just interested. If you'd only listened to us, you wouldn't have gone through the trauma of watching series three. So,
yeah. I know. It's so true. It's so true. And, you know, this gets back to, we had talked a while back about how I was, in terms of Star Trek Discovery, the new CBS All Access series, which I've heard has a budget of $7 million per episode, just a huge budget. You know, and I was pessimistic, I guess would be a word that we could use. Dismissive might be another one.
Milking the dead cash cow of the husk that was the Star Trek show.
Maybe a Grinch. Maybe a Grinch would be another one. Another word. But, and then, of course, it was none less than Larry Nemechek who said, no, look, there's reason for hope here. And of course, people have been very excited about the fact that the showrunner would be Brian Fuller. And as I mentioned about The Fall, season one, so great, but the showrunner changes and the show diminishes in quality. We know this, as although we might champion some season three episodes of Star Trek, you can feel the loss of showrunner Gene Kuhn, right? I mean, he was masterful, and when a showrunner leaves a show, you expect that you might feel it.
Russell T. Davis and Doctor Who.
Did you? Oh, okay. That's always an example that's used. Of course, as you know, I don't know the Doctor Who's that is what I say. But did you see the news that first Star Trek Discovery has been pushed back?
Yes.
Quite a ways. They are way behind. And now, I guess the appropriate terminology, since it's Star Trek, is that Brian Fuller, the man on whom everyone was laying their hopes, has been relieved of command on the show. Yeah. And two first-time showrunners are taking over the show. So this, I'm back to being...
pessimistic.
Cautiously pessimistic.
Let it go, Phil. Let it go. You know, I had to do this
well. Well, wait a minute. I was ready to let Star Trek go a long time ago. I, like the rest of the box office world that enabled Star Trek Beyond to be a flop that lost almost $100 million, I have let go of it. It's you that keeps pulling me back in.
Hannah, I mean, thoughts from your good self. I mean, clearly, as the social secretary for the Harry Potter Society and a keen aficionado of matters science fiction, which is why you get such a selection of Phil Lynas and Lily Holliman jingles on the production. I mean, you know, again, there is the class now, which sometimes needs to be shown in its entire naked speech entirety.
Hannah Brown, historic Harwick heroine and hyperbolic midweek drivette.
Are you sure it's not Harwich? Harwich heroine?
What did I say?
I don't. You said Harwick. I mean, the hyperbolic midweek drive out was right. Also, I love the deep breath you took before Hannah Brown. Like you're taking a big bite out of Hannah Brown. We're keeping all this in.
I hope that'll be making an appearance at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club variety.
Oh my God! Can I interview Hannah about the Harry Potter situation? The scenario.
Of course you can. Go.
Okay. Hannah, have you seen the stage play that's going on in London? Have we heard good things about the stage play? What can you tell me?
I have not personally seen it, much to my great disappointment, but I know many people have, and I've heard nothing but good things about people actually seeing it. I've read the, because obviously they released the script in a book version, and
yep.
I have read that. And from reading it, I could see that it would be really good on stage, and I really want
now,
to go there.
Now, when you say that you can see it would be really good on stage, does that mean it's a good read? Because indeed, sometimes, look, plays are not necessarily meant to be read as literature. They're meant to be performed. So was it a good read? Was it a thrilling read? Or do you really have to envision the production while you're doing it?
I think probably envisaging
the production.
Yeah, that word's just not happening right now. Because I found that quite easy when I was reading it to see the play happening before me. But a lot of people I've spoken to who haven't seen the play and have only read the script really didn't like it and have issues with the script. And I feel like for that reason, I think they went into it expecting another J.K. Rowling book of a couple hundred or more pages.
Yeah, you can't create the tone the way that she does in the books. You're limited by the nature. I mean, a play is a blueprint. You know, a script is a blueprint.
Yeah.
And so much of the architectural work, including the tone of it, the magical tone, needs to be done. Do you know if they're going to make that into a movie eventually?
It's inevitable.
Okay. This is after five Fantastic Beasts movies they're going to make.
Okay.
And is what I read true? I saw a headline that Johnny Depp starring in the second one.
Oh, I've not heard this one.
Hannah, you've got Empire magazine in front of you there. Yeah. On the front cover, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Inside back cover, what university is actually branded in Empire magazine? Share with us and the world, of course, it is.
The University of Lincoln. Says, a fantastic education and where to find it.
Yay!
You can see what they did there.
We do our cinematic scenarios. Yeah. We were just looking around somewhere and look, it's a fantastic education. Where? University of Lincoln.
And you can join the Harry Potter Society.
There you are, you see.
Fantastic. So a fantastic education from the University of Lincoln, but 19 hours after the news broke that Johnny Depp is joining the cast of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the students of Lincoln still don't know about it? 19 hours, Alex. I mean, that should be the motto. University of Lincoln, 19 hours behind the rest of the world.
You're going to get me kicked out of the society now.
Key change. And Andy, number between 2 and 26, please.
24.
Extraordinary. Anyway, here it is.
It's the way you think. That's your purpose. It's never been about what work you choose, what gifts you develop, or what niche you fill. Let these be for your pleasure. Think only as you can think, which will lead to feelings that only you can feel, from which connections will be made, lives will be changed, and worlds will come tumbling into existence. This is why you're here. Thanks, the universe.
Of course, he hasn't even liked your photograph on Facebook as yet, Phil. Anna. Oh, Lord, I'm very confused now. Still, what the heck? Did that work for you, Andy?
Absolutely. Namaste.
Nice. And Phil?
Yes, you've confused me about the photo thing.
We earlier in the production we did some shots of Hannah with the Star Trek magazine, and they are now published on the site. So there we are, done. That's it, basically. I think we've got Michael.
Keep it together, Alex.
We have Michael Barwise. It's okay. I mean, I'm merely his independent study supervisor. I know who he is. Coming to join us after 7 o'clock to do an hour, which kind of paves the way until you return, Andy, with, of course, the legendary program that is entitled. That's it. The silent number. You can see. You see, 19 hours into the future, we would identify the program precisely. We know exactly what we're referring to. It's the poetry program, although that's not the official name that's actually been given. Ask Phil the last two questions, and I'll come up with the title of the program.
Phil, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I have had a great time, and I must say I particularly enjoyed the piece about cars. Even though I advocate a car-free lifestyle, and I really appreciated what they had to say about taking care of your autos, because as someone once told me, the most environmentally friendly car you'll ever own is the one you currently own. So take care of it, make it last.
And will you be joining us at some stage in the future?
I'll be here next week.
The computer has decided to actually have a momentary sort of scenario. So, Hannah, can I go old school and could you actually just take that little poster down? Just look at the other side of that poster and peel it off, and then we'll be able to reveal exactly what
it's
show.
It's got a quill on it.
It has got a quill on it.
It has got a quill
exactly.
On it.
It's sorted through from that. It's actually fused to the window. The title of the program is...
Word Perfect.
Which none of us were this evening.
Exactly. Just to get we're building our part, obviously, but you know that's the important thing. Word Perfect, and the poster has now been restored. Thanks to Camo from Nashville, Anna Lewis from Jersey, Larry Nemechek from, of course, Los Angeles, Jody Kidd, Sean Kelly, Steve Court, Peter Beale, and Phil Leonis. Did you like Sean's piece of music, Phil, or were you tuned out by that
song? I did, actually. I thought that was great fun.
That's okay. Tomorrow morning, a whole heap of other good things, including a ballet version of Pinocchio, Richard Fitzwilliams talking about another Amy Adams classic movie, Steve Dickinson from Sci-Fi Scarborough, William Sitwell, and Kaylee Carr from Sunderland, as well as Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar. Will you be back with us then, Hannah?
As long as I remember to set my alarm clock.
Always important. Always critical. Ben Lewis will hopefully be joining us for that. Andy, have you enjoyed the production?
I have indeed. I always do.
Back again in the very near future?
Anytime you invite me and I can make it, Alex.
Splendid stuff. And Phil Linus has already said those two words, so all we have to say now is live long and prosper. No, we'll say...
Nano, nano.
We could say that as well. Or Hannah, what's the equivalent in Potter sort of farewell terms?
Always.
Always.
We're doing some Severus Snape or here going there for that one.
Well,
yeah.
Then always. I thought it was a movie that Steven Spielberg actually did with Richard Dreyfuss and various other sort of folk. Anyway, can we say bye-bye? One, two, three.
Bye.
Always.